RadioMD.com. Become a healthier you 5 days a week. This is Melanie Cole's Health Radio.
Really, it's always seemed that men got all the attention about sexual dysfunction and sexual health issues, and we women kind of stayed around, as we did when it was all about heart disease and all the research was done on men. Well, now I think it's coming a little bit closer, where women's sexual health is coming more to the forefront, as it should. My guest today is Brooke Fott. She's a nurse practitioner and the clinical director of Women's Institute for Sexual Health. Welcome to the show, Brooke. Are we finally getting into the forefront of sexual health? Are we finally getting noticed for the things and issues that we deal with every day?
We are, and thank you for having me. Yeah, this is a very exciting time in medicine for women, as well as for sexual medicine. You know, it's been 20 years or so since Viagra was approved for men with erectile dysfunction, and over the years, a plethora of medications have been FDA approved to either directly or indirectly facilitate and enhance the sexual response in men. And just in the past couple of years, we've finally just had a few medications that have been approved for women in the realms of libido as well as sexual pain after menopause.
What are some of the most common sexual problems? I mean, with men, obviously, we hear about erectile dysfunction, and we hear about, you know, some of the incontinence, different issues, and libido and all that. And what about for women? What are some of the most common you hear?
So sexual dysfunction in women encompasses issues with sexual desire or libido, arousal and orgasm, and then sexual pain. And I see women from all walks of life and all age categories that that have these conditions for a variety of different reasons. So there have been multiple studies showing that women report, about half of women report sexual complaints at some time in their life. And many of these conditions overlap, so it's very rare, actually, in my practice that I have a woman that just has one sexual complaint. But for instance, after menopause, you know, a lot happens to the body, including a suppression of estrogen and testosterone. And so sex drive, arousal, orgasm can change, but also vaginal tissue changes drastically. And it's a piece of menopause that women don't often attribute to that change. A lot of times it takes 3 to 5 years for that to happen. Women start to think something's wrong with them, but they don't realize it's related to menopause. It's chronic and progressive, which means it worsens over time without treatment. And so for women that don't seek treatment or are not treated appropriately for whatever reason, these conditions can become even more debilitating and really impact a woman's self-worth, their relationship, and just ability to remain sexual.
Brooke, I'm surprised it's taken this long for it to come to the forefront, because we've had to sit with our feet in stirrups, and embarrassment goes out the window when you're having babies. And I mean, God, we've been going through things that men would shudder from. It's hard enough to get them to a friggin' urologist once a year. And we always have had to do this since we're 16 and whatever.
Yeah.
Plus, not to mention mammograms and everything else.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot that goes into the maintenance of our bodies.
Early,
you know, teens.
And so why would we ever be embarrassed to talk about with our gynies? My goodness, I could talk to mine about absolutely anything. And so these kinds of things, women's libido, the perimenopausal changes and the menopausal changes and such, what do you want women to know about the help that's out there for them? Maybe some of them are saying, Brooke, that they don't want to start going on all these medications or hormone replacements to tackle that vaginal dryness or the hot. So what do you tell them?
Okay, so there are a lot of reasons, number one, why women don't bring up this issue, and one of those, yes, can be embarrassment. A lot of women think that there aren't treatment options, so they don't want to bother their medical provider, or they don't even want to waste their time because there's so many other things that they have to deal with during those annual visits. In addition, they're afraid that maybe they will embarrass their medical provider. You know, if they bring this up and the medical provider isn't comfortable discussing that issue, or maybe they don't have a treatment option, they don't want them to feel inadequate. And I hear that pretty often. It's pretty comedic. And, you know, in addition, I live in Nashville now, and I have a lot of women that were brought up to believe that sex is something that should not be discussed. So it really depends upon the background. But there are treatment options, and there is not a one-size-fits-all protocol for all women, and it's not just hormones. Sure, if there's a hormonal issue that is going on, sometimes that can be relevant. But there's a plethora of non-hormonal options that women can consider and possibly be candidates for a lot of these conditions.
Well, certainly, and there's always that standard line after having a baby, doc, take an extra stitch. So even some of these things have to deal with just the physical, not even only physiological. So there's physical issues as well, changes in our vaginas and things that go on. So what do we do? Do we talk to our gynecologist about things that start to concern us and then start there?
Absolutely. And if you don't receive the information that you need or the attention that you need, then get a second opinion. And it's really not to the discredit of the medical provider if you don't receive the correct information. A lot of medical programs do not incorporate training for women's sexual medicine, believe it or not. It's just in the past decade or so, very slowly being incorporated into training. But, you know, if your provider doesn't have an answer to any medical question that you have, if anything, they should be able to guide you in the right direction to find resources or maybe a specialist such as myself in your area that that can give you more answers and possibly provide some treatment options.
Women complain of painful sex after menopause. Does that get better without treatment? Is it something, as you say, our bodies change? It doesn't get better without treatment.
No, it worsens. It's the one aspect of menopause that is chronic and progressive, and without treatment, it's only going to worsen.
Wow, and what are some of those treatments?
There's lots of different treatments. You know, for some women that are lucky and it's maybe just a little bit of dryness or minor discomfort, sometimes lubricants and moisturizers can be helpful, although I encourage women to be very careful about over-the-counter products. Many have alcohol in the base or other preservatives that can cause caustic irritation. And if those products do not work or patients are not a candidate for that, or if the symptoms become moderate to severe, that's when medical intervention can or should be considered. And once again, there's hormonal options for sure, but there's also non-hormonal options as well. And really a conversation with a knowledgeable medical provider is really the only way to know for sure what the best treatment option is going to be for that individual patient.
We only have a couple minutes left, Brooke, but recently the new, what they called the female Viagra, and it's not really even that, has been introduced. So do you see that as something for to help with women's? And it's not even necessarily libido, is it, this female Viagra?
Well, you know, the medications that are being
was a
released,
little misleading.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, female Viagra is an inaccurate term. But the big picture is that for women's sex drive, there are new medications on the horizon. They can be safe and effective in some circumstances. And there's a lot of research that's out there, and I hope to see more and more options available that are FDA approved over the next decade or so, which is a really, really exciting turn of events. Had some of these medications not been approved, I really fear that a lot of research would have ceased and we would have been kind of stuck back in the dark ages again.
So in just the last minute, Brooke, what do you want women to know about discussing their sexual health? I mean, you're the clinical director of the Women's Institute for Sexual Health, so you see and do this every single day. Give women a little bit of your best advice about not being embarrassed and getting in touch with their sexual health so that, you know, they're happier.
Yeah, if you don't speak up, nobody will know. And it's absolutely critical that you are open and honest with yourself. It doesn't mean you have to discuss with your friends or family, but discuss with a medical provider that you trust. And once again, if you don't receive the answers that you need or you want, then certainly move on and find somebody that can help you. There's a couple of resources that are great that can help guide women in certain circumstances. PainfulSexAfterMenopause.com is a wonderful resource, as well as ISWISH, which is the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. And I know that's a mouthful, but it's a great organization with a website, iswish.org. And it helps to guide both professionals as well as the general population on local resources for medical professionals that have an interest in sexual medicine for women.
Thank you so much, Brooke. You're listening to Radio MD. This is Melanie Cole. We have more great show coming up. Stay well and stay tuned.